Welcome back to the She Mentors podcast. My name is Ali Adey, and today I'll be chatting with Ashley Wilson, who is a neurodiversity advocate. She has Asperger's syndrome, and she's really keen to change the conversation around this. So instead of us treating it like a disability, she wants employers and business owners to consider the benefits of having neurodiverse teams that can each bring about fresh perspectives and unique skills to the table. Ashley is also a member of She Mentors, so I always love chatting to our very own members, and she is available for one-on-one mentor hours inside the membership. So if you're curious about joining She Mentors, then jump over to shementors.com.au. All right, let's jump straight into the interview. Ashley, thank you so much for being on the She Mentors podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited, Ali. And like I said before, like, you know, She Mentors, this platform that you have is extraordinary. And I think, you know, it's all about let's continue to support each other and let's continue to help each other through these times. And I'm so excited to be part of the storytelling and share my adventures along the way.
So we're doing a diversity podcast series, and we're basically just wanting to use the platform to give everyone a voice. And to, because our membership's so diverse, but I feel like there's a lot of stories that don't get told publicly. And whether that's to do with like gender equality or racial discrimination or disabilities or mental health, I think there isn't a platform really that lets just everyday people tell their stories. And so that was one of the things we wanted to do with She Mentors. We were like, right, what can we do to kind of help discrimination, to fight for equality to everyone? And we've got all these incredible members like you who have these incredible stories to tell. And we were like, well, why don't we use our podcast platform to invite people like you onto the show?
So thank you so much. I'm super excited. Like, I've done a video podcast before, but not like an audio podcast as such. So yeah. I'm really excited. And thank you so much for allowing me to be part of it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you. So you've been part of the membership for a little while now, but
I have,
Yeah, and you've kind of found a lot of comfort from mentor hours and the community that we've built, and you've come on my radar for that exact reason, as we were just saying off air. So do you want to tell people who don't know anything about you a little bit about your story and your career history and everything?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've got all my notes here, so I make sure I don't miss anything important. So this is just me, but that's all good. So So I guess my adventure started when I was diagnosed at the age of 3. So, and I'll talk a little bit about what Asperger's syndrome is and the behavioral traits and everything else like that. But essentially I was diagnosed when I was 3 years old. And during my primary school and high school period, I was always perceived as different, you know, not like a normal everyday person, I guess you can say. And so when we moved from New South Wales to Queensland in 2001, I, you know, you're in that state where you have to make new friends, you have to, you know, get to know new people. And so it was during that time where I just put a camouflage, you know, around myself. So I started to become just like this alias. So, you know, hiding who I really was. And in a way, I wish I didn't do that, because, you know, it made me realize, you know, for people to not really see who I really am. And I was picked on, bullied a lot in high school, just those usual things, because I was different. But then fast forwarding it to 2008, where when I finished high school, I started just working in just administration, just to really get my foot in the door in terms of professionalism in the career aspect. And from 2015, I decided to make a career transition into tech. So I thought, you know what, I've been in administration now for, you know, a while now, and I'm looking to make that change. I'm looking to make that shift. And I wanted to do something for myself and where I want to go. So I always had a passion for tech. So I started to go to uni at QUT in Brisbane, and I did a Bachelor of Information Technology, and it was probably the best decision I ever made. And it led me to joining Coder Academy as a part-time employee, which is really exciting. So I worked for them whilst also finishing up my studies. So that creates a lot of that flexibility, which I've never seen a lot of workplaces do. And back then, I didn't disclose to my work about who I really was. And it wasn't until 2019, around about June, where it got to a point where I was adding a lot of pressure on myself, where I thought I had to be at 110% all the time, and, you know, do my best all the time without making any mistakes or anything like that. And it got to that point where, because I was adding so much pressure on myself, that I had an anxiety episode at work. And I remember that was such an emotional roller coaster, I guess you can say, because it made me realize that, you know, it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to have those days where, you know, things aren't going your way. It's okay to cry it out, let it all out. I think one of my ex-managers at the time, she calls it, you know, let out your inner Beyonce. And that's exactly what I did. I let out my inner Beyonce, and she gave me a call just to check in to see how it was going. And for the first time in a really long time, I actually said, you know what? I'm not doing okay. I'm really not doing okay. So we had a chat. She helped me a lot to talk things through, and they actually gave me 2 mental health days off, which I'm really glad that they did, because it just allowed me to take time for myself and just to, you know, think properly, but also look after myself. I think that's number one priority. And it wasn't until the week later where I don't know what came about, but I wanted to share who I really was to my manager at the time. And so I did. And again, same thing. It was such an emotional morning for both of us, because we were just talking about, you know, like how proud she was that I shared my story, and talking about our experiences together as well. And we decided to just workshop together so that I can build my confidence to share my diagnosis with the company in general. And it was a virtual meeting, so we have virtual catch-ups just to see how things are going. And when it got to me, I couldn't say it, because it was like taking something from you and sharing it to the world. You know, that's something that's so pivotal, and that you're just ripping it apart and just sharing it. So I couldn't, because it just got to that emotional state where I just had to like walk away. But then I shared an email, and I was welcomed with so much positivity and so much, you know, welcome, which is awesome. So that was like one thing I was really worried about, was being seen as a label or being seen as someone different. So just to put it out there, it's okay to be different, because we're all unique in some small way or some big way. So if I hadn't shared my diagnosis with my work, but also with the tech community a couple of months later, I wouldn't be able to do what I do right now comfortably, and that is share my story, but also share, you know, the benefits of why it's so important to talk about things like this. And it's led me to so many opportunities, such as public speaking, podcasts, which is amazing, and just those little things that just, you know, bring so much positivity and joy, which I think we all need, you know, during this time especially.
Absolutely. And I think there's lots of elements of that story that I really want to delve deeper into, because I think it's really fascinating. But first, well done for telling everyone and for going through that, you know, transition, and for being brave and vulnerable and telling people. I mean, that's a huge achievement.
Thank you. It wasn't easy at first, but, you know, I'm so glad I did, because, you know, it's, like I said before, it's led me to so many opportunities to continue to be who I really am comfortably, and to continue to support others in that journey as well.
You're giving people the courage to also handle it, deal with it, come out and tell people about it. So, and that's what we need. We need more people talking about their experiences and being really honest as well. Like, thank you for being really honest there, because it's appreciated.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
So with people who maybe aren't familiar with Asperger's, do you want to maybe just give us an overview of what that is, in particular your diagnosis, but also just on a larger scale?
Yeah, so I guess Asperger's in general, so it's a developmental disorder, and it essentially affects the ability to socialise and to communicate. So I know when I was back in primary school, that was a lot that I struggled with. especially with the communication side of things. And I remember I used to go to Sydney. There's a school there where you spend a week there as well. And it helps you to talk properly, to effectively communicate, but also to effectively socialize. And this was all, I think it was around about maybe 4 or 5 years old when I started going to those places. And essentially with Asperger's, it's a condition on the autism spectrum, and it's generally high functioning. So technically I am considered high function. And I know, especially as a kid, I was very high functioning. And so essentially, you know, people with this condition may be socially awkward and have all absorbing interests and specific topics. And I know when it came to primary school, that was a lot I had to go through. But when it came to when we moved to Queensland, that was when I didn't really talk a lot about it to my friends at the time, because I was worried I'd be perceived differently. And so that's where I just started to put this camouflage on myself until last year.
So when you were younger, when was it first sort of apparent that you were different?
Yeah, I guess my recollection was maybe around about kindergarten or grade one, where I remember, you know, the kids would, you know, come up to me and say, you know, these sentences, which I had no idea what those sentences meant. And I can't remember what those sentences were, but I just said them. And I remember when the kids were, you know, laughing, but looking back at it now, they were laughing at me because I was saying these unusual sentences, not laughing. Yeah. Just on the lines of that, essentially. And I think that's, looking back at it now, that's when I realized that, you know, I am different. And back then it really did hurt me, but looking into the future now, I'm more focused on the future and where I want to take myself in the future. So I'm looking at things more positively rather than going backwards and thinking, you know, negative about those little things.
Yeah, that's right. So did you, so you went to the school in Sydney to kind of help with your communication skills? Because I have to say, like, your communication skills and everything is perfect. So was that, did that come, was that much harder for you then to learn those behaviours?
Yeah, it was. And I'm just trying to remember exactly how that panned out. But I do know that it was a struggle for me in primary school, especially at such an early age, where I would just, you know, tend things to myself. I would just do things my way, not really socialize and, you know, hang out with other people at my age during school. And I remember just during my primary school days where I would just, you know, during lunchtime, I'll just walk around the, what do you call it? It's like the back of the school. It's like, you know, where the playground is and everything else. There's a word for it. I cannot remember the word for it. But I'll just walk around there by myself, just walking around, because I didn't feel comfortable just, you know, socializing with other kids. But in terms of speaking, you know, before I started to do a lot more public speaking, I was terrified because, you know, I thought you had to, the way that I saw it, I thought you hear some palm cards, you have to remember every single word on it and tell it like it is. You know, it's back to my high school days. But now I start to learn, you know, it's just share your story and just go for it. And, you know, you might fumble on the way, but that's okay, because then you can, you know, get yourself up and then keep going and keep going. So I started to do a lot more speaking when I was at uni. There was a unit that I did that helps you to build confidence in public speaking. So that to me was like kind of like the biggest step, so I can do more of this. And I still feel nervous, but in a way it makes me excited, you know, because I think you have to feel some emotion, you know, when it comes to speaking or doing anything. If you're nervous, then you're excited. I learned that from a colleague of mine, and I'm really glad she did that.
Yes. So I used to get so nervous before going up on stage, actually mentors events. And to be honest, like, I still get that. Like, I still get the butterflies, I get dry mouth, and I get the shakes. And like, no matter how many times I've done it, and I've done it for 3 or 4 years now, I still find that incredibly nerve-wracking. But I think the thing that helped me is that, and it's probably the same for you, is that when you've got an interesting story to share or a purpose and a reason to be up on stage, it does take over from the nerves, because at the end of the day, it's not really about you or me. It's about the message that you're delivering. Mm. And yours is a really powerful one. And the She Mentors community is a really powerful one. So I think when you can get over the initial like, oh God, everyone's looking at me, and you focus on the actual message that you're delivering, which is a really powerful one, it really helps. And I think you do that really well.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I'll talk a little bit about, you know, how I got into public speaking, like Pause Fest, for example. I think that's definitely a really good point. And that is, you know, we still get nervous about those little things, like public speaking, you know, or even if I'm talking to students in a classroom, I still get nervous, you know, because it's, you know, they're looking at me, oh no, like I got to make a good impression. Yeah. But it's actually a lot of fun. Once you start speaking, I find the nerves just disappear completely.
And the more you do it, the better at it you get.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
Mm. So when you left school and you went to university and you were doing your public speaking training and courses, did you ever face sort of discrimination because of your diagnosis, maybe in your early career or throughout university?
Yeah. I was having a really good think about this question. Not necessarily, because until when I disclosed it to my work last year, I didn't really see a lot of that discrimination besides, you know, just being picked on and bullied in primary school and high school because I was perceived as being different. Mm. So that was the only really time I would go through that. But in terms of, you know, working, you know, that sort of thing, not a great deal, in my opinion, because I was just, I just camouflaged myself and I just, you know, disguised myself as being, in my words, just being a normal person. But when I disclosed it to my work, again, I had that same gut feeling that I thought I was going to be treated differently, or I was going to be seen as just a giant label on my body, just saying, you know, I'm XYZ sort of person. But again, when I shared it, it again, same thing, it was brought with so much, you know, positivity, but also it made me realize, it made me love myself more. And it, you know, by loving yourself more, it means you, it brings out that confidence to share with the world about your story, but it also allows others that might be going through that same thing a platform to, you know, be able to be comfortable sharing their story. So really, it's mostly just in those school days where I just received a lot of that backlash. Mm-hmm. And then come to starting to work professionally, not a lot. But again, it was because I didn't share who I really was back then until last year.
And you said that there was a sort of trigger and you had an episode. How does that work? Like, is that something that is specific to having Asperger's, or was that just general anxiety, because lots of us go through that?
It was a lot of anxiety. It was a lot of anxiety and pressure that I was adding on myself, because for me, I always want to do my best all the time. But at the same time, you know, you're going to have those days when things aren't going to go the way that you want it to. And, you know, you start to burn out. And that, I know when I go through that burnout, that does trigger me really deeply and really, really heavily. And I know that when I was being stood down in March, that's like a lot of change. And for me, when I receive news that creates such a massive change, it does burn me out deeply. And so usually it takes me like a few days or so just for me to actually recover from that. And I guess when it came to that episode specifically, last year, it was purely just anxiety, and just thinking about, oh my gosh, I gotta do this and this and this and this. Where do I start with this, you know? And I'm one of those people where if I have a list, the list is up here. I need to get into the habit, and this is the biggest weakness of mine, I need to get into the habit of writing things down on a paper, so I know that here's my list, okay, what do I need to prioritize? What do I need to start with? Or what can wait? What can wait for tomorrow? And that I wasn't really good at that time. So I was just doing so many things and not putting myself first. So not putting my mental health first. And again, going back, I'm really glad, in a way, I'm really glad that that happened, because if when my manager called me and we discussed it, you know, it allowed me to be more open. And be more open that for the first time I can really just say, look, I actually am not doing okay, and this is why I'm not doing okay. And, you know, for workplaces, it's really important for workplaces to be, I guess, to be considerate of other people's feelings, that, you know, if this person's not doing well, that's okay. But it's also really important to support them and to check in on them. And with COVID, that's so important, and now more than ever, to continue that trajectory.
Mm. It's great that you had that support from your manager and your colleagues, and I bet that gave you a lot of confidence when you had that conversation with them.
It did. And I was so nervous because, you know, that's, again, same thing. It's like taking something that's so personal to you and then sharing it. Mm. So having colleagues that I have now that's always supportive, that always checks in, that always wants you to do well, but also wants you to look after yourself, that to me is like a big tick for me.
Yeah. And obviously that has been the tipping point for you, because now you specialise in neurodiversity, which I would love to get into a little bit. Do you want to explain what that means to people who aren't familiar with the term?
Yeah, so neurodiversity, the way that I see it, it's broken up into, I break it up into two factors. So you've got neuro, which is the brain, and then diversity, which is a range of different kinds. Mm-hmm. So when you put them together, it's a range of different kinds of the brain. And what it is, it's many different things. It can be, it essentially applies to those with neurological differences, and it's differences in individual brain function and behavioral traits. So such things as autism spectrum, dyslexia, ADHD, Tourette's, those are just some of the examples. But essentially, if you're one of those or many of those, then you are considered as neurodiverse. Mm. And it was actually coined by Judy Singer, and she mentioned it in her thesis in around about, I think it was like the late 90s, and it was reproduced in a book called Neurodiversity, The Birth of an Idea. It's a book you can get on Amazon. You can download it. I tried finding it in bookshops like Dimmicks, but I can't find it anywhere. But if you have a look online, it has all the details there. And, you know, before she put the work out there, you know, neurodiversity, it really mapped out that new category in emergence. Before then, it had no name and had no meaning. And so she's also a leading pioneer on the autism spectrum in Australia, and she still continues to do such extraordinary work within that field.
Mm, that's great. And so do you, you speak now about neurodiversity, and you've kind of become like an advocate and ambassador, haven't you?
I guess so, yeah. It's, yeah. And that's the thing. It's so hard to talk about yourself, you know, in that retrospect. Like I keep forgetting, oh, wow, like I've done this. And I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done this. Like, I keep forgetting that, you know. Going back to that, there's a really great video called "I Am Remarkable." It's on YouTube, and if you haven't seen it, it's such an extraordinary video. I think it's done by Google. So Google released called "I Am Remarkable," and it basically showcases these extraordinary women that they get given a task. Okay. Here's a piece of paper, write down why you're remarkable. And that's hard. That is so, so hard to do. So I guess in a way, I'm trying to consider myself that, yes, I am remarkable, because I love to do what I do. I love to share, you know, the benefits of neurodiversity and everything else like that. So going back to my public speaking engagement, it all started when our work gave us a task that, hey, there's a conference that's coming up in Melbourne in February 2020 called Horsefest. If you're interested, applications are open. They close in 3 weeks' time. Let us know if you need help with workshopping. And this is just after I disclosed who I really was. And so I thought, yeah, I'd love to do that. Like, it's huge, but I'd love to do it. So I started to look into ideas of, you know, what can I do? What can I present? And I was thinking about, you know, growth mindset, women in tech, my story, that sort of thing. And then I went back to sharing my story and thinking about, okay, what else can I talk about? And I think one of them mentioned about, you know, neurodiversity. And I thought, what is neurodiversity? I've never heard of that word before. So I did some research, and we did some more workshopping, and I looked at neurodiversity in workplaces. And there's a bunch of resources of these workplaces that create these benefits for neurodiversity. And so I wanted to talk about things that are related to neurodiversity in workplaces, such as benefits, why it's important to hire neurodiverse individuals, and what can that do for your company, and just those little changes that companies can make to make it more flexible, but to make it more inclusive. Mm. So submitted that, got accepted, was not expecting it at all. I remember I screamed when I read the email. I was screaming with excitement. Luckily, I was at home at the time, but I think my apartment might have heard me. And that was just like, okay, like, I think, like, I'm onto something. I think I could do this. So I did another talk before Horsefest called DDD in Brisbane, and that stands for Developer, Developer, Developer. And it's an extraordinary one-day conference in all the major cities, and you can do a talk. And the public selects what talks they want to go to, and they can just go from there. But it's a really welcoming place. And that was the start of my, I guess, public speaking circuit. And then I did Horsefest just before the COVID became a real thing at that time. And I've done, yeah, then I got invited to do a video podcast with Dawncast, and She Mentors, which is awesome. And I've got one coming up in October, which is with Pluralsight Live. So I've recorded my session, sent that off, which is all good to go. And then I've got another one coming up in the works, which is exciting.
Love
so it's
it.
Really, it's awesome to share my story and to build my confidence even further.
Yeah. I remember you saying that when just before Horsefest, you lost your voice.
Oh, that was an interesting day. So what happened was Melbourne, obviously change of weather, you know, I didn't pack the right clothes to go to Melbourne. So what happened was I didn't speak until Friday. So I had enough time to just look at other talks and, you know, chat to other people. And then I started getting a sore throat on a Thursday. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, this is interesting. This is not good. But you know what? I'll just drink some hot tea and then I'll be all fine. And then as the day progressed, it started to get a little bit worse. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just go through my slides and just make sure everything's all good. And then I'll get an early night's sleep. I woke up at 4 a.m. the next morning because I was really nervous because I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, like, I got to speak in like 6 hours or something like that. And I just couldn't get back to sleep because I was so nervous. I was excited and nervous. Oh my gosh, what do I do? What do I wear? How do I do my hair? How do I do my makeup? You know, the usual. Yeah, that's it. And then I got ready, and then I remembered I let out a sneeze and my voice just completely disappears. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I have no voice. I have to speak in 4 hours and I have no voice. And I went to the chemist. Before I went, I was trying to find a chemist, and one of the girls who was also speaking, she noticed I had my lanyard on, and she's like, oh, do you need, because I'm going to catch an Uber to the convention center, do you want a lift? And I couldn't speak, so I just said, yeah, Like, I couldn't speak. I had to nod. And there was a chemist around the area, got everything for my throat, everything that you can think of. And I did my talk. My voice came back just in the nick of time with a lot of tea, a lot of throat gargle, you know, that's all I had that day. I was sick. I was hungry. But you know what? I had a great time. I really had a great time. And 20 minutes went by just like that, so quick. And people were so welcoming. And I remember I started my talk saying, look, I'm really sorry, but I lost my voice beforehand. And they just, you know, they just clapped with, you know, they really, you know, brought my confidence up. So I'm like, okay, cool. And this is my talk for the day.
Well done. God, that would have been absolutely terrifying.
It was terrifying just because of the thought of losing your voice.
Yeah.
But then, you know, once you started talking, it was actually fine. So I managed to get through it. And I'm so glad I did. And lesson learned, pack warm clothes.
I did well. And you're also top 10 women in tech in Brisbane. Is that right?
Yes, that's it.
How did that come about?
How it came about. So one of my dear friends, but also a dear network friend of mine, her name is Sammy Herbert, and she is just a pocket rocket full of amazingness, but also one of the leading women in tech in Brisbane. And she did this extraordinary article called Brisbane's Top 10 Women in Tech. And this is around about 2019. And it's extraordinary because, you know, she showcased so many amazing women in tech that are doing such extraordinary things, you know, for the community, but for the women in tech. And so, yeah, I was considered as one of the top 10 for my work with Coder Academy, but also for my work for, I used to moderate panel talks. We used to do like panel discussions at Coder Academy, which is awesome. And she was one of the panelists that I invited for one of the talks that we did in 2018. And just these little things like that, you know, doing such extraordinary things for the community, but also being able to support each other as a unified group of extraordinary women, but also extraordinary people that are doing so many great things within the Brisbane tech space. And yeah, that was basically that. And, you know, I'm still proud to be a part of that extraordinary list, but also be a part of a tech community in Brisbane that is constantly always looking out for each other, always checking in with each other. And I think that's exactly what companies and communities need to do more often, is those things plus more.
Well, that leads me on to the next part that I really want to talk to you about, actually, because you've got all this amazing experience from your own personal experiences, but also having worked in different companies, and you've got the tech startup, or the meetup, sorry, in Brisbane, which is really great. There's some stats that have come out that I read that were published by Amaze, and I'll just read it out to you. It says, in Australia, the unemployment rate for autistic people is 31.6%. This is 3 times the rate of people with disability and almost 6 times the rate of people without disability. You're probably not surprised by that. And I wondered what your thoughts were on how workplaces can attract more diversity within their companies.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that was actually one of the statistics I've also mentioned many times in my talks before. And even though that is a small number, to me, that's still huge. That's a big, big number. And there was also a study in 2016 by Curtin University. They have an autism research group there. And they did a study that 80% of unemployed adults with autism around the world are unemployed. And 40.8% of Australian adults are employed with autism. So this was back in 2016. And again, small numbers, but 2016... fast-forwarding it to 2020, during a global pandemic, and we're seeing unemployment rates, you know, continue to go down, and people being affected mentally, emotionally, but also professionally. I can't imagine what those numbers are at the moment, because I don't want to think about it, because it's probably too high, you know. And I think that there needs to be more change in how we can, how workplaces can be more accepting. So I guess in terms of, you know, what can companies do to support more neurodiversity, there's lots of things. And I guess my top four would be, is the first one is to reconsider the interview process. So this to me is one of the many, many, many important things, reconsider those interview questions, because a lot of the times, and I've gone through this many times before whenever I go to interviews, is that you get a lot of ambiguous and too broad questions that can be a disadvantage for neurodiverse talent and can discard them from great employees. And so, you know, there's definitely workarounds to it. So, you know, consider whether a face-to-face interview is essential or if there's an alternative that could work, such as you know, like Zoom, Hangouts, Skype, you know, virtual. That to me, I like, because it means that, you know, I can have my list of possible questions and possible answers, and I've got them on a piece of paper ready to go in case I need to refer to them. And that to me makes me feel more comfortable, is that. The other thing is, you know, instead of asking them, you know, question and question and question, offer them sample tasks. So, you know, it's about seeing how they perform, but you're also not putting them under pressure by asking them, you know, these really difficult questions that even myself, I can't answer properly unless I've got the notes with me ready to go. The other thing is, managers and particularly, train them to recognize and support those strengths. So such things as planning awareness campaigns for colleagues to help them understand how to work better. So for example, it could be better awareness around dyslexia would help the staff understand how to improve email communication with colleagues. So just those little things like that. And that also leads me into empowering. So empower through advocacy. So this is for workplaces, this is for community-based groups, this is for pretty much everything out there. And so by empowering, you're creating more comfortability for neurodiverse people, such as myself, to share our perspectives, but also to feel confident that the organisation won't look down on us. Mm-hmm. And those are the biggest things that I consider to be really important.
Those are some great tips. Often it's so difficult anyway in an interview environment, because you feel like you have to prep for all of these questions that you may or may not get asked. I feel like a lot of people aren't good communicators naturally. They might not be able to negotiate easily, but they're amazing at their job. And they're really just judged on how well they can present themselves and communicate.
That's it. And it's also because I love being able to showcase what I can do. I may not have like the right skills in, you know, say project management, or I may not have, you know, 100% skills in this area or this area. But what I have is I have enthusiasm, I have confidence, and I have keenness to learn and to continue to support along the way. Mm. So those are some of the qualities that, you know, I always love to bring in interviews. But when it comes to doing well in interviews, I always have to like prep the night beforehand, because, well, sometimes it can be days beforehand, because to think about, okay, what questions are they going to ask me? These are my answers. And when it comes to the interviews, like if you're going face to face, then that's when my nerves start to kick in. I'm just thinking, like, I don't know what to do, because they're asking me to, do you have an example of leadership? Do you have an example of this? And sometimes I just freeze and I just have to think, I need to like think of an answer right now, and just see how I go. Mm-hmm. So allow us to showcase what we can do and, you know, the qualities that we have, and we can learn along the way. And I think that's so important, is, you know, it shouldn't just be about, can you do this, 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 this. It should be about, you know, we love your confidence, we love your, you know, skills. We understand that you have, that you need to learn this and this. We're willing to help you with that. You know, it's about that inclusivity in that interview process, which I think there should be more of, especially now more than ever.
And particularly around, I think, educating managers and people doing the hiring process, because it really is on them to make sure that the interview is well executed, that they're taking into consideration all of these external factors. And there's a lot of pressure on both the manager and on yourself to get a good outcome. And I think there really does need to be an educational piece there.
There is. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of change happening for companies out there. So such as, you know, like Microsoft, BHP, IBM, SAP, they have these really great neurodiverse programs. Mm-hmm. And they specifically hire people that are neurodiverse into these programs that they have, where they might go around working as a developer, as a engineer, manager, or a coder, lots and lots of things. But it also allows them to try different things and to, you know, be able to showcase what they can really do. And that's the other thing as well with neurodiverse individuals, is that we excel in so many different areas creatively. So such as like coding, that's a big one. Mm. Coding is really great because there is so much out there within coding. And I know like Westpac, they've got a program that they just announced in Sydney that's in partnership with Specialstone, and they have this program where they're going to hire neurodiverse individuals to their teams within Westpac. So it's really, really nice, because I wish that there's more of those companies to continue to do that. And I'm keeping my eye on the radar as to what other companies are also embracing that neurodiverse into their companies.
I think it's amazing, and it's such a brilliant initiative. And I think the more that people talk about neurodiversity and the benefits, the more companies will actually jump on the bandwagon and see why it is important to have people from different backgrounds, experiences, offering different skill sets. You know, we shouldn't all be the same working together, you know, coming from exactly the same experience or background, because that's such a narrow-minded way of growing a business.
That's it. And I think, you know what, we also, like you and me, we're all unique in some way, and we can bring so much to the table, whether it's public speaking, whether it's coding, whether it's, you know, sharing our love for the community, all those sorts of things. I feel like that everyone is deserving, and everyone is equal, and everyone is unique to bring so much to the company that they're working for, or their dream company that they'd love to work for. You know, it's just those little things.
Do you think Asperger's has had a bad rep? Do you think it has a bad reputation?
I think, yeah, and I think this is where a lot of the myths come into play. And in terms of those myths, people assume that, you know, with Asperger's that you're only diagnosed when you're a child. That's not true, because I've come across so many people that have been diagnosed at a late age that are now sharing their stories to the world. So one in particular that I want to mention, her name is Elizabeth Wicklander, and she was diagnosed at the age of 28 years old. And I first came about to understanding her through a TED talk that she did. So if you have a look on YouTube, Elizabeth Wicklander TED talk, she does this really extraordinary video that brought me to tears, because, you know, she was able to share her story on a global stage and to talk about, you know, why it's important to be more accepting of neurodiverse individuals. And she's now a cellist for the London Philharmonic Orchestra. And she's now an in-demand speaker within that space. So it's really extraordinary. The other thing is, in terms of common myths, is that we don't make eye contact. Many of us do make excellent eye contact. sometimes it can be a little bit uncomfortable at first, especially when it comes to face-to-face. But, you know, as I progress, it becomes a lot easier. I know, obviously, during my primary school days as a kid, that was really difficult. But then going into, you know, the professional world and to now, I feel a lot more comfortable just making eye contact with different people as well. And there's a lot out there as well. And it's just about, yeah, just understanding that, you know, with myths, most of them aren't true, and there's a way that we can definitely work our way around it. But also, like I said before, we bring so much of that, you know, that support, but also we bring so much quality and so much, I like to call it colour. We bring so much colour, you know, into everyone's lives. And I love, you know, just those little things that just can make such a big difference.
Mm. What are some of those sort of unique skills typically associated with Asperger's?
Yeah, so there is a lot. I want to talk a little bit about specifically within the workplace. So we're capable of contributing powerfully to society in positive ways. And I like to think of it as every kind of mind is equally deserving of respect and value. So the way that I see it, contributing to society is, say, for example, for myself, I love to contribute to the tech community through meetups. So I organise a meetup called Brisbane Tech Newbies. And Brisbane Tech Newbies, the name speaks for itself. Okay. It's a meetup for anyone and everyone to come along and to learn more about tech. Which I love. So it's just those little things like that, but also, again, talking, public speaking, sharing my stories, but also sharing about the importance of neurodiversity. The other thing is exceptional concentration, logic, and imagination and visual thought, and the ability to think outside the box, which I absolutely love. So some examples is, say, dyslexia. So 84% of dyslexia people are above average in reasoning, understanding patterns, but also evaluating possibilities and making decisions. And ADHD, you know, holding routine tasks, which can equal to creating a productive work environment. And it's also strong abilities, like I mentioned before, with computer programming, mathematics, creativity, above average attention to detail, and art and design, and also as well adaptive functioning. So going back to the recruitment side of things, throwing a challenge to the people that interview. So rather than focusing on what people struggle to do, focus on what people can do well and their ability to grow to reach their full potential of a desired skill. So if their desired skill is coding, allow them to code, you know, let them showcase what they can do. If their desired skill is painting, you know, allow them to demonstrate what they can do. And, you know, once they start to do that, then you can really see, wow, this person, I can see that their love and passion is in this area. And I think they'll be a really great fit for XYZ sort of area.
I love all of that. I think it's such valuable advice, and it's so true. You know, you put people where their passions are, what they love doing, and then they outperform and they shine.
Absolutely, definitely.
Yeah, I think that's really great. Do you have any advice for other people, maybe who are autistic or on the spectrum in any way, and they're going for job interviews? Do you have any advice for them? You know, would you recommend that they perhaps tell the employer that they have a disability?
So I guess my advice for women that are looking to, say, speak publicly or are looking for jobs is the first one, which I think, you know, it can be hard, but don't give up. Don't give up. I know that sometimes it can be really difficult to, you know, to give up, but always know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It might not be, you know, within reach, but it will be soon. So don't give up. The other thing is to, and again, it might be difficult at first, but don't be afraid to talk about it. Mm. The more we talk about it, the more support we can, you know, receive, and, you know, the more that we can learn more about the opportunities out there. So, like, for me, for example, when I shared about my diagnosis, again, I was terrified. I was so, so terrified because I thought that I was going to be seen differently, or I was going to be, you know, treated differently, or they were going to look down on me, you know. By talking about it, you never know what's going to happen. And for me, there's always going to be so much of that welcoming presence from the other person that you speak to. For the company, I know that's like a huge thing, you know, to talk about it with a company. Take some time for yourself. Don't go in a rush and, you know, talk about it right there and then. It took me a month to talk to be able to publicly disclose with my company, a month, which is a long time, but it allowed me to build that confidence and to try and not get emotional about it, even though I did. But at the same time, I'm really glad I did, because I was able to let them see who I really am. Don't be afraid to also, if you're looking for job opportunities, reach out to your network. I know that there's a lot of companies, especially recruitment companies, that are hiring specifically for neurodiverse individuals, or are helping neurodiverse individuals, you know, to get to where they want to go. So such companies as Exceptional, they are an extraordinary, I can't recommend them enough. They are an extraordinary organization that are doing many things within that space, such as coaching, mentoring, but also they help to find neurodiverse individuals to find work. And they've got some really great partnerships in place as well, such as IPA, which is another big recruitment firm. So they've recently formed a partnership with them. There's another one. It's Audicon. Audicon, they are a IT consulting business, and what they do is they hire just specifically for neurodiverse individuals. Hmm. I think they have an office in Sydney, and I think they have one in London, but I know they have offices elsewhere as well. And it's just those little things like that. So you never know who you might reach out to. LinkedIn is a really great platform. There are so many great neurodiverse advocates out there that want to help those that are looking for work, but are also looking to make a big change in those companies, but also make a big change for themselves, which, again, that means so much to me.
Yeah, that's so good. And what's your vision for the future? Like, where are you going to take this?
Yeah, I guess especially during COVID, I'm kind of living on a day-by-day situation where I don't know what tomorrow is going to be like, or the next day or the next day, but I'm definitely looking forward towards the future. And that is, I still want to continue doing what I do, you know, being able to share my story and to be able to continue that public speaking circuit. And I'm really excited for it. So I don't see that stopping anytime soon. And finally, I want to continue supporting the tech community in more ways than one. So whether that be through meetups or through storytelling, through LinkedIn or Twitter. Twitter is actually a really great platform where you can find a lot of stories through neurodiversity, which is really awesome. But I guess for the future, in terms of professionally, I'm excited for it because I don't know where it's going to take me. But as well as that, I just want to continue making, I want to continue making a positive difference to my local area, but also make a positive difference to the world. And I hope I am on the right track to do that. And yeah, I guess I'm really excited to see where the future will take me, and who knows where it will take me. That's part I love about it, is that I'm excited about, you know, is the future.
You're definitely on the right track.
Thank you.
So you're part of She Mentors as well. So if there's anyone out there that would love a mentor hour with you, they can, everyone in our community each gives 1 hour a month, and Ashley is part of that, which is really great. So, you know, if there are other people out there that need advice and support, you're available. But where else can people connect with you as well?
Yeah, so people can connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter. So my handle for Twitter, it's a nickname that my best friend came up with years and years ago. It's at Ashlebug. So it's spelled A-S-H-L-E-B-U-G. Why she gave me that nickname, I don't know. but it kind of just stuck with me. And I thought, you know what, I like this name. So I've just used it as my Twitter handle ever since. So, yeah, LinkedIn, Twitter are my main forms of communication. Or if you want to reach out, have any questions, would like to follow my journeys and my adventures, those are my two platforms I use.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I'll include those in the show notes below the podcast as well, so people can just tap away and connect with you. I just wanted to say thank you from the She Mentors community for A, being a massive part of it, and also for being so vulnerable and brave and sharing your story on this platform, because I know there's going to be lots of people listening who perhaps will take a lot of comfort and feel inspired to maybe share their stories and feel more confident in asking for what they need from employers and workplaces as well.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ali. I really, really appreciate it. And like I said before, thank you for allowing me to use this platform, well, inviting me to this platform to showcase my story, but also, you know, throwing this challenge to everyone out there that, you know, is probably in the same boat that I was. There's going to be support along the way, and there's going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. The most important thing is we need to talk about it. The more we talk about it, then the more we can help along the way and guide you in the right direction.
I love it. Thank you so much. And I will be seeing you inside the membership shortly.
Yay. Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you so much to Ashley for joining us on the She Mentors podcast. I'll leave all her details in the show notes so you can go and connect with her. And as I mentioned at the start, she is available for mentor hours within the She Mentors community as well. So you can hop over to shementors.com.au. Okay, see you next time.